We're talking about noise pollution here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our ears are exposed to harmful sounds every day, maybe like these. And it is affecting our health. A study in the European Heart Journal late last year associated higher levels of noise exposure with increasing activity in the area of the brain that's involved in processing stress and anxiety and fear. And excess noise also increased inflammation in the arteries. That's a known trigger for cardiovascular problems. Do you live in a noisy area? How has it affected your life? Have you tried to adapt? What noises are the most distracting or disruptive? We're at 800-642-1234. Les Blomberg is executive director of the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse. That's a nonprofit he founded in 1996 to raise awareness about and track noise pollution. Les, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you, Kate. Appreciate you having me on.
Why is noise so dangerous to us?
Well, you know, there are a host of effects of noise. You mentioned a couple of them in the intro. You know, the most obvious one is hearing loss. And I don't know if you're aware, but it is Hearing Awareness Day today. And it is a CDC and World Health Organization event. And it kind of has gotten lost in all of the recent news about the coronavirus and all their work, really. But, you know, hearing loss is one of the, most common results of noise exposure. And the World Health Organization estimates that like 50% of people who are, you know, between 15 and 35 are at risk for losing hearing. So, you know, about half of our young people are probably exposing themselves to noise levels that can risk their hearing.
And that's a direct correlation to being around loud noise or subjecting yourself to some types of very loud noise.
Yeah. So it could be either a very short duration loud noise or a long duration of a quieter noise, but still very loud. For example, listening to iPhone or headphones or something like that has been shown to if you keep it loud, you know, that you can play those loud enough that you can cause hearing damage. Recreational noise, shooting guns, off-road vehicles, stuff like that. And then workplace noise, working in a factory, working in a loud environment.
Working on a tarmac.
Excuse me?
Working on a tarmac at an airport would be another example.
Absolutely. And you'll see, you know, most of the people there hopefully are wearing hearing protection. And, you know, we do a pretty poor job in this country of actually protecting our hearing, because we've known for 100 years that loud noises cause hearing damage. But we really, in the last 50 years, haven't significantly reduced our rates of hearing loss amongst our population.
Les, there is noise all around us. So what meets the threshold of a noise polluter?
Well, you know, again, this depends a lot on the source, right? For example, we were talking about hearing loss. And for that, you know, the common recommendation is that if you have to raise your voice to hold a conversation when you're, you know, arm's length away from somebody, you ought to be wearing hearing protection. Somewhere in the 75 to 85 decibel range, depending on how long you're exposed to it, maybe between 8 and 1 hour, moving from 75 to 85 decibels. The problem is nobody knows what those decibel levels mean or are. But so basically, you know, I think from the hearing perspective, it's important just to be protective. If you're mowing your lawn, you probably ought to wear hearing protection. That's probably like the best judge for the general public is the gas-powered lawnmower for an hour. You ought to be wearing hearing protection. Now, for other things, for example, another health effect is sleep interference and sleep loss. The noise levels that affect sleep are going to be much, much lower than the ones that damage your hearing. You know, people will start having sleep interference problems in the 40 decibel range and possibly lower if they're very sensitive. And so the range can be quite great. There's also other effects of noise. There are, you know, effects on activity. You know, it impacts activities that we're doing. For example, listening to the TV, communication interference, just our ability to talk. Children in schools, and you know, noise has been linked to poor performance.
And we're gonna get there in just a moment to the effect on children in schools. Talking with Les Blomberg, executive director of the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse, we're talking about the effects of noise on our bodies. Do you live or work in a loud environment? What is the sound from? How do you cope? Are earplugs enough? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Les, what studies are there linking loud noise to cardiovascular disease and our heart health? What are you seeing there?
Sure. Well, that was, you know, probably the next big category. You know, until recently, people have kind of thought of noise as kind of a nuisance. And we've even titled it or defined it as unwanted sound. And I really don't like to define noise that way. I like to define noise as a sound that harms your well-being or health or interferes with your activities. And that's because, really, in the last 10 or 15 years, we've had a number of studies linking noise to cardiovascular effects. Probably the most interesting one was done by the Harvard School of Public Health, and it was done with almost 6 million Medicare patients, looking at hospital admission rates around hospitals. And what it found is that there's kind of a threshold of where the impacts begin for cardiovascular effects. It seems to be a day-night average of 55 decibels, and then grows up at about 3 point, you know, the increase of cardiac admissions to hospitals increases by about 3.5% for every 10 decibel increase. So as you get up to the 65 decibel range and then up to the 75 decibel range, you will add 3.5 decibels, or 3.5% more people admitted.
What do we know that's going on in the brain? Is this a fight or flight response?
That's exactly what it is. It's triggering our, you know, we evolved as a species in a much quieter time. You know, the world right now is as noisy as it has ever been. It has never been like this before. And when we were evolving, it was much quieter. Warning, you know, sound and noise was used as a warning for us. And it's really ingrained in our biology. Your child crying or in the middle of the night will get you up and get you addressing it. And, you know, whatever their needs are. And it's always been kind of a warning signal. And what that warning signal does is trigger our fight or flight response. It gives us a shot of adrenaline. This is a response that occurs before our conscious reaction. So when you hear that airplane go over, your body gets kind of amped up and ready to protect yourself.
And you do that over and over again, that can have serious health consequences.
Oh, yeah. And so, like, some of those include, you know, there's been links to aviation and transportation noise, to obesity and weight size, to high blood pressure, to heart attacks, to a number of cardiovascular diabetes.
Let's pause right there with Les Blomberg, who heads up the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse based in Vermont. Have you been unable to work due to noise? How do you cope? Have you woken up in the middle of the night because of loud noises? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about noise pollution here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So late last year, Apple introduced the Noise app on the Apple Watch. It alerts you when the sound around you is getting to a point where it could damage your ears. You can also set a decibel threshold in the app and get a notification if the surrounding noise reaches or exceeds that level. Have you tried things like this to control your exposure to noise? Are there some noises you tolerate just fine, but others that are extremely upsetting to you? Have you suffered hearing loss because of loud noises? How is it affecting you? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Les Blomberg is executive director of the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse, and he stays with us. Let's take a call now. Lobbit is joining us in Milwaukee. Hi, Lobbit.
Hi. I used to live in the central city of Milwaukee and in a neighborhood that had a lot of boom cars. And the cars would have the, they'd be like large boom boxes, and the noise would be just pounding, 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 and they'd sit outside your house for hours, and you could ask them to turn it down and they wouldn't. They'd just be really nasty about it sometimes, and they'd do it way late into the night, and sometimes you'd see them with their little brothers and sisters coming out of there, and you think, my gosh, those kids, are they going to have any hearing by the time they get older? You know, it would just shake the house and everything. You'd feel it inside your body,
yeah.
Coming up from the boards of the house and everything.
Lobbit, thank you for describing that experience. Les, what does it mean when your neighbors, the people around you, have retrofit their life with sound, such as, you know, changing the car speakers?
Right. You know, noise has a large aspect of civility in the entire issue. And it really is, in many ways, about how we treat our neighbors. And, you know, my motto is that good neighbors keep their noise to themselves. And really, it is an issue of civility that we are living, you know, in an era where there's 330 million people living in this country. There's, you know, what, 6 or 7 billion on the planet. And we need to, you know, be able to live with each other and not impose ourselves on others. And that is exactly what your caller was describing, is kind of, you know, imposing what you're doing, what you're listening to on other people.
Let's look at the effects on children. How big of a problem is environmental noise around schools?
You know, this one is pretty well documented, and so much so that the American National Standards Institute, which is a standards body in the United States, has developed a set of guidelines for schools trying to keep the noise levels in the schools less than 35 decibels so that it does not interfere with learning. There's been a lot of studies, the first done by a researcher named Arlene Bronzeft, who looked at children in New York City exposed to subway, you know, elevated subway noise, the elevated noise of the transportation system, the rail system there in New York City. And what she found was that the children on the noisy side of a school, on the side of the school exposed to this, the rail tracks, by the time they were in sixth grade, were a year behind in reading ability. And since then, there have been a host of other studies that have found...
Yeah, because that study was from the 1970s, so there's been a long time to really dig into that issue.
There is. I think we've been a little slow to respond to it, but there's been a long time to dig into it. Most of these things, you know, back in the 1970s, the United States was the leader in noise control in the world. The U.S. EPA Office of Noise Control and Noise Abatement and Control... was doing a lot of things to, you know, begin to regulate and noise and to study noise and its health effects. The very first cardiovascular health studies were being undertaken in the late 70s by the U.S. EPA. Those were discontinued in 1981. Ronald Reagan, when he became president, closed the EPA noise office. And as a result of that, those studies really didn't get going again until almost the year 2000, when some of these health studies that we've been talking about already started to occur. And in the meantime, our leadership in the area of noise has totally slipped away. It's really the European countries and some Asian countries now that are the leaders in noise regulation and noise control, and not the United States anymore.
Talking with Les Blomberg, executive director of the Vermont-based nonprofit Noise Pollution Clearinghouse, and you can join in with your thoughts, your situations. How do you try to control noise in your life? Do you work in construction or in a factory setting, maybe in airport tarmac? How big of an issue is noise, and how do you protect yourself from it? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Les, as we were looking there back into the 70s and the 80s, when did you become concerned about noise, and how did the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse get started?
Yes, well, the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse got started in 1996, and it got started because of my interest in noise, which came about mostly because I was being awakened by the city's street sweeper several times a night, several nights a week. And this is in a town that had only 8,000 people, and it was running at, you know, basically the level of an unmuffled motorcycle driving through your neighborhoods, you know, revving its engine at 4 a.m. And so that is how I got interested in noise. And then by a happy coincidence, Montpelier, Vermont is the only state capital in the country without a McDonald's. And I and my wife and a couple other people were leading this effort. And ironically, because of my work trying to prevent McDonald's from coming into Montpelier, and we were successful, I met a woman who wanted to fund a noise organization, and she donated the initial $50,000 to get the organization going.
So you are researching, you're tracking noise pollution since the 90s. Has noise become a bigger problem in our country?
You know, I think noise has grown. My best guess is that, and it is more than a guess, I guess, because I've researched this pretty carefully, is that my best estimate, I would say, is that noise peaked sometime between 2007 and now. What happened in 2007, 2008 was, you know, the Great Recession. That led to us driving a lot less and flying a lot less. And we continue not to drive as much. We're starting to fly more again. However, the other thing that happened in 2007 is a lot of the older, noisier planes were mothballed, and so, or were possibly shipped to other parts of the world, but not the United States. So in the United States, I would say that we are kind of at an inflection point right now. Our noise is as loud as it's ever been in the history of this country. And we are at a point where it could continue plateauing, it could decrease, or it could increase significantly. And probably the biggest threats to the increase have to do with aviation noise, drones, flying cars, and the use of helicopters as taxis, which are starting to occur on the East and West Coast, are probably the things that could drive it upward. The things that could drive it downward are things like electric vehicles, which are much quieter than gas-powered ones, and electric lawn equipment. The noise that we hear, for the most part, you know, with some exceptions like your earlier caller, is the result of burning fossil fuels. I kind of think of the 20th century as the fossil fuel era of noise pollution, and of noise as almost being the sound of global warming. Because we've been, you know, creating a racket by turning fossil fuels into carbon dioxide and putting that, you know, in the, somewhere in the process of putting that in their atmosphere, whether we're driving, flying, generating electricity, whatever, we are making a racket that we have never been able to make before. When you think about it, the wheel and the domestication of the horse, the beginning of transportation noise, is only 6,000 years ago that that happened.
Les Blomberg is our guide. He heads up the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse. We're spending the hour on environmental sounds, tracing their effects. Do you live near a busy airport or a busy intersection? Do you think you've become acclimated to the noise, or has it become intolerable? Join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Coming up, we'll talk about the sound from jet engines that generate supersonic thrust, like the F-35. That's right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking about noise pollution. It is a global health concern. Noise pollution is defined as harmful or annoying levels of noise with a detrimental impact on human or animal activity. How has living in a noisy area affected your life and your ability to carry out daily tasks? What questions do you have about reducing environmental sounds around you? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Les Blomberg founded the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse in the 1990s, and he stays with us. So, Les, Madison is a front runner to be a base for the F-35 fighter jets, and protesters took to the front gates of Truax Field on Saturday, chanting things like, take your planes and go away. And here is one protester, Tamina Islam, talking with WKOW-TV in Madison.
I live in the Eakin Park neighborhood, and my home is in the 65 decibel zone, which renders a home incompatible with residential use.
So she said there very quickly, 65 decibel zone. What are the noise concerns about jets like the F-35?
Sure. Well, you know, the noise concerns are the same as we've been talking about. It's all of the probably not hearing loss, but probably all of the other concerns, sleep interference, activity interference, communication interference, poor performance in schools, cardiovascular effects, obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, and then just a general, you know, reduction in your quality of life and an increase of an annoyance as a result of it.
The Vermont Air National Guard has F-35 jets at its base not far from where you live. How have the jets affected people living in the Burlington, Vermont area?
They've had a number of effects. I know that one effect is that many, many of the homes around the airport were bought up because of the expansion. And so it's changed the neighborhood because, you know, they've been purchased and people have moved out. The other effects are, you know, I know there have been a number of complaints. I know of that, you know, kind of like you, as of today, they are beginning nighttime training. And so a whole host of new effects will be occurring. I believe that they're only about halfway to their full fleet of F-35s in Burlington right now. And so I don't think the full effects are known, although I know that there have been numerous complaints lodged.
How does the noise from F-35s, for instance, compare to the noise made by F-16 fighter jets?
Sure. They're definitely louder. You can see that in the reports. You can hear that by, you know, being around them. The EIS that was done for the Wisconsin Airport and the Air National Guard does show a significant expansion of, you know, what they called the 65 DNL contour that was referenced in your clip you played. That contour is not just, we got to remember that the studies we were talking about earlier show the heart and cardiovascular effects threshold to be probably 55 decibels and not 65. In addition, you know, President Trump actually sued Palm Beach International Airport near Mar-a-Lago for noise, and he was well outside of the 55 decibel contour. He was, you know, definitely in a much quieter area, and, you know, I still ended up suing them for $100 million. That lawsuit actually was dropped when he became president, and he kind of won by default, because when he's there, they don't fly over the facility at all, is Mar-a-Lago at all.
So when you look at these environmental impact studies and you know that airports are becoming busier places, what can cities do to mitigate noise from airports?
Yes, that is a major challenge. And it's a challenge because the FAA claims control of the airspace. So once a plane is off the ground, the FAA is the entity that is responsible for it, and they really have not done, they have not updated their 65 decibel recommendation or standard since the 1970s. They have not kept up with the data and the science. And so, you know, one thing that needs to be done is that we need to change the way the noise is regulated. One way to do that is to have the EPA and not the FAA regulate the aviation noise.
And so you're saying take the Environmental Protection Agency and take it over on the noise issue from the Federal Aviation Administration.
Exactly. But the local airports have a role too, and local communities. It's really hard for local city councils to say no to developers who want to, develop some land. And so, you know,
because that's economic development right there.
Exactly. And we really need a buffer around these airports. And what happens is if you don't, they eventually, you know, around the major airports, what you find is that the people that end up living near these facilities, because the property values are less around the airports, what happens is you tend to get lower income people and people of color and people with lower education and a host of other economic and, you know, social characteristics that really form a significant environmental justice issue. We in the United States, for the most part, tend to noise pollute the poor and people of color.
Talking with Les Blomberg, founder of the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse. It's an organization that tracks and resources this issue. Do you live near an airport or a busy intersection? Do you think you've become acclimated to the noise, or has it become too much? Are you alarmed by how noise can affect your mood, your quality of life, and make you irritable around loved ones? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Carrie emailed to say that they live near a main road and their oven rack shakes from trucks over the bridge. And Carrie says loud mufflers and music thankfully dissipate on Sunday. What strategies, Les, have you seen people take who live in noisy areas to, you know, live with this or curtail the noise around their homes?
Sure. Well, you know, you kind of get to, you know, like, what the question is really, what can you do about noise pollution? And, you know, one solution is the earplug, right? You can put earplugs in. That's not a very attractive solution, because that in itself interferes with communication. It makes your enjoyment of things less. You can try to put earplugs in your house by the equivalent of that, by, you know, insulating your windows, insulating your walls, better insulating them, putting up some barrier between yourself and the noise. But really, the way we can best quiet noise is to quiet it at the source. And what your examples and almost every example points to is that noise takes a community to quiet it. And that's because it only takes one noise to trump quiet. That noise always interferes with quiet enjoyment of something. My quiet enjoyment, like if I'm on my deck reading, will never interfere with a person driving by in an unmuffled vehicle or somebody mowing their lawn next to me. But that mowing of the lawn or driving in a loud, unmuffled vehicle will interfere with my reading on my deck. And so we really do need to address noise as a community. It's not something that we can solve individually. You can do certain things, you know, some small things. But, you know, if you insulate your house and your windows, that means you've got to keep your windows shut. And that means now you got to run an air conditioner in the summer.
And you've walled off a little bit of your neighbors, your neighborliness, things like that. Well, Les, you know, many sounds like barking dogs or thunder or the wind, they're natural occurrences. Do people perceive them differently than machine noise?
Probably yes and no. I don't know. I mean, barking dogs, I mean, they're still under the control of people. But there are a bunch of, you know, natural noises like thunder. And you're right, you know, most of our life, or most of the life, you know, most of human history, thunder was the loudest sound that anyone would be exposed to. And, you know, now what we've done is we've replaced that with many, many more human-made sounds that are just as loud in our environment. So I think what you're really noticing is just the frequency of it. Yes, thunder is loud. It occurs when the thunderstorm happens, and it wakes us up. And it has, you know, if the thunderstorm comes through in the middle of the night, it might wake you up, and it might have the same impact.
But that too shall pass. Yeah. Les Blomberg is our guide to conversation about noise pollution in Wisconsin, across the world. He heads up a nonprofit that tracks and researches this. You can join in 800-642-1234. Have you detected too much noise in your home, like the washing machine shaking out of balance, the hum of the fridge, or a bathroom fan? Let's talk about it back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're spending the hour on noise pollution, and according to NASA, green aviation is a term used to describe activities in the industry that improve aircraft efficiency and reduce noise pollution and greenhouse gases. How do you think we should address airplane-related noise issues? Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Les Blomberg is the head of the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse, and he stays with us. Let's take a call now. Diane is joining us from Turtle Flambeau. Hi, Diane. Hi, Diane. Are you there? Oh, Diane. Diane, are you there? Nope, Diane's not there. Let's go to Jill in Madison. Hi, Jill.
Yes, good morning. I've only just tuned in, so I'm calling to say about the proposed F-35 jets that are coming to the Dane County Regional Airport. And the fact that we have a lot of people have tried to stop this coming to our area, because we know that the noise pollution is going to, at least 1,000 homes are going to be so adversely affected that they can't live there anymore. But it's also going to be very difficult for others. And also we know, apart from the terrible noise pollution, that there is water pollution, FSAT pollution, which is going to get even worse, and it has been requested that at least that be cleaned up before they even bring them, but that's probably not going to happen.
Jill, thank you for the call. Les, what do you recommend people do who live near airports or are susceptible to these jets? How do they, you know, try to alleviate the noise?
Right. You know, this is going to be, you know, a problem that is not easy to solve, because you know, you're basically increasing health risks for a lot of people, decreasing performance in school for a lot of people. It's basically an additional tax imposed on people. And I understand, you know, that we need our defenses. And the problem is that we're imposing an additional cost or tax on a very few number of people. And we're not all sharing and experiencing some of it. If this is critical to our defenses, what we need to do is find a way to compensate those people and help them. And not just soundproof their home, because that's only, you know, part of it. We need to really help compensate them for the costs that they're in, you know, basically suffering at our benefit. And I think of it as like an additional tax, but only imposed on the people who live near that facility.
Can you share any success stories of communities or people successfully eliminating noise pollution?
Well, you know, there are a lot of them. I mean, there's even a jet story. I mean, there was the Concorde supersonic jet in the 70s that, you know, they never, the makers of this jet never thought that they were going to be limited to just a mere 20 or so jets flying only across the Atlantic and not going supersonic over land. And it was really a bunch of people near JFK Airport who actually threatened a drive-in where they were going to drive through the airport and basically shut it down. They were going to drive through in 5 miles an hour. And this would basically have shut down the airport over this over these flights. And that and the other, you know, community reaction actually ended the supersonic industry. I mean, they never intended to build only 20 aircraft, 20 of the Concorde aircraft. Other solutions, there's on the coasts, we can fly, gain and lose altitude over water, out over the ocean. So there are things that we can do in landing an aircraft. Often, if you're coming down, you will often spend a lot of time, maybe at 10,000 feet, and then maybe at 3,000 feet. What we ought to do is we ought to sort out all the airplanes up at 30,000 feet and bring them straight down into the runway so that they're not traveling over our communities at low elevation. They just drop right into the airport. So there are things that we can do, but there's also alternatives we got to look for. We got to look for increasing rail and other alternatives to aviation, too.
Well, Les, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Les Blomberg is executive director of the Vermont-based Noise Pollution Clearinghouse. And we have a link, by the way, at wpr.org/mornings.